This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
As we have passed the one-year mark of the new Malaysia, it's time to take stock of all that has been accomplished since Pakatan Harapan took their historic entrance into government. Today, we will be talking about Pakatan Harapan's one-year journey review, the trials or triumphs of boosting the digital economy of Malaysia, and how to keep it real to achieving economic progress. So my guest for today is a familiar face, Sudhev Banga. He's the Managing Director of IDC ASEAN. Sudhev, welcome back to the show. We last spoke in July 2018, a few months into the new Malaysia, and we talked about the proposal for internet access to be made a constitutional right and the benefits to the national e-economy. Now it's slightly more than a full year of the new Malaysia, so how has it been so far from an IDC perspective?
Well, Jeff, I think overall it's been exciting from a point of view in terms of the number of initiatives or the number of plans and frameworks that have come out from the current government. I think what has been exciting has been the aspiration of the government to want to push ahead with a technology agenda. I think on our side, the larger concern was that with so many initiatives, with so many different ideas and projects and frameworks being launched, there is a concern over where the attention and the focus is going to be. And I think that's what we're seeing right now, because as you know, technology isn't the only thing that you have to focus on. There's so many other things in the country that we will have to focus on, and technology is just one of it. And if you keep coming up with different ideas and different frameworks and try to push it ahead without a proper plan of execution and proper programs to implement it, you're going to be in a little bit of a problem. And that's where we see Malaysia is in right now, because I think it's very aspirational, which is great. There's a lot of discussions around it. And I think on your program as well, I mentioned once that Malaysia tends to be the envy of many countries when it comes to the number of initiatives being introduced, but never the envy when it comes to implementation. And I think, unfortunately, a year later, while we see a lot of excitement, we're still a little bit cautiously optimistic in terms of how the implementation is going to be. We're not pessimistic by any means, because we still see the excitement around the industry. But you go all the way back to the discussion around the internet discussion. What's been exciting was that there was a knee-jerk reaction to that announcement. And I think speeds went up, costs went down. There was a lot of excitement and buzz around the market. And as a result, I have read that there were statistics about an uptick of internet penetration and adoption due to that. And Malaysians are enjoying 25% cheaper broadband access at this point in time in terms of the charges. But that's really it, right? And I think the further down the road point over the next couple of years, especially around the implementation, there needs to be further discussions around the programs that's going to touch every facet and aspect of lives of the rakyat. And I think when that occurs and we actually see the fruit of all these plans and talk occurring, I mean, park the flying car aside, right? There are some things which were brought up which were, I think fairly interesting to talk
That's
about.
That's a nice way of putting it.
But I think there were some very core initiatives of which I think when it takes shape, like DNA 23, for example, I think that is a very good initiative from a holistic standpoint. However, we've not seen the programs. We've not seen how they're going to implement it. We have not seen what is going to take place and how the agencies are going to work together and collaborate. So I think all these little pieces have to be pulled together to form a very holistic approach to technology in the country, and that's what's missing right now.
And the DNA 23, that's the digital native agenda, and like you said, like, you know, we've only heard, you know, just a top line of it, but you know, in terms of the details and what it constitutes and how it's going to be implemented, we've not heard this yet so far. And a lot of things that, you know, let's talk about one of the first few things that we've seen kind of push the needle that you mentioned is the internet. You know, for it to be cheaper and faster, and that was kind of, you know, YB Gobind came out and said that, you know, he's going to get the telcos and telecom especially to enforce this, and it took some time before, you know, this was enforced. But but it's still very much a consumer thing. You know, it's just trying to get more people to have internet access. More people have been complaining about, oh, internet in Malaysia is relatively expensive when compared to around the region. But on the business side, nothing really much has changed, or has the needle been moved slightly?
Not really. I think at this point, over the past year, we've seen everything pretty much the same as it was a year ago. Again, there's excitement, which is good. It's always great when a country is reinvigorated around an area, a topic of discussion. Now it's around IoT. It's still around 5G enabling industries. And, you know, with the pilots out in Cyberjaya and Putrajaya, I guess from on our side, from our IDC's perspective, is that it has to move beyond the face of these technology, right? So for instance, you know, once upon a time, the face of the IoT technology was wearables. Mm. When, let's be honest, IoT is so much more than just wearables, but there was the face. And for 5G, apparently, and you look across every nation, and Malaysia is one of it, is that immediately we start talking about autonomous vehicles. And we do have to move beyond that discussion because 5G enables so much more in an industry compared to just autonomous vehicles. I mean, the excitement over getting a car from point A to point B thanks to 5G, let's move beyond that. You go to Singapore and you go to the park out in the Gardens by the Bay, and you have an autonomous vehicle taking tourist visitors from point A to point B for the past few years. Mm. Let's move beyond that. And let's actually talk about how 5G can enable manufacturers, how 5G can enable healthcare, how you can create, go back to almost 20 years ago when telehealth was first introduced in Malaysia, and the talk about teleconsultation between the village areas as well as urban doctors, and utilize 5G as a point for urban doctors to be able to help village doctors to look at x-rays, to look at, you know, diagnosis, and to provide that. There's so many use cases around 5G that is beyond autonomous vehicles. And I think our concern, again, is that we get very swept away with the hype around these, the face of these technologies, that we tend to then think that, you know what, for it to be popular, for it to resonate with people, we bring up these very typical use cases, autonomous vehicles, wearables, for example. Mm. AR-VR is always around gaming, for example, when AR-VR can be so much more than gaming. So this is where, at least from our perspective, the sit-down, the implementation, the programs that have to be introduced have to actually look deeper in, especially when we talk about the digital economy. The digital economy is not going to be driven by autonomous vehicles. It's not going to be driven by wearables. It's not going to be driven solely on gaming from AR/VR. It will be driven by industries consuming and utilizing the technology as a core of their industry, either to break into new revenue streams, create new business, or enable their current business. Mm.
And it's been about, you know, more than a year now, and we've seen so many kind of frameworks or just visions that we have for the digital space for it to become a national the digital economy. We've got things like the national digital ID to all Malaysians. You know, the 2019 national budget was a testament to accelerating Industry 4.0, which is, you know, another thing. Then we've got the Industry 4.0 readiness index as well. You know, we're doing a lot of things in the digital space because you can't run away from it. But, you know, based on what you say, and I totally agree with you in the sense that, you know, we were great in coming up with brand new ideas or just new ideas and trying to get people excited about, but it comes down to the implementation. It comes down to pushing the needle and trying to lead in certain areas. But where can we start? Like, how can we do that? How do we make the people be more hungry and understand the technology that's given to you or that's available to you right now is more than just a tool for you to, you know, have better internet quality, better streaming quality, and, you know, faster internet access?
Yeah, I think it comes back again to the advocacy around technology, right? And what technology can do for you. Right now, technology is still seen as a very nice to have. Mm. When a lot of the discussions around technology does occur is around consumers, as you rightly pointed out just now. And that is, for me, honestly, a little bit populist, right? I mean, if you want the popular vote, you want the popular opinion, you want people to cheer you on, the immediate reaction for you is to bring that to the consumer, because if the consumer is happy, ergo, you would have done your job over there. When you talk about industries, it's a little bit more difficult because that would require an understanding of where the industry is actually moving. And I've been giving this example over the past month, actually, in traveling across Southeast Asia. And if you notice, a lot of large-scale conglomerates who claim to have undergone digital transformation, who have claimed to have benefited from digital transformation, majority of their new revenue stream of which they've created from digital, very cheekily, is from new subsidiaries, tech-based subsidiaries. So they create a payment subsidiary, they create a e-gaming or e-commerce subsidiary, of which then marries to the group and provides a new revenue stream. Now, that does not necessarily constitute digital transformation within the core of that organization, but it is a new revenue stream based off digital means, of which then when we talk about the digital economy and we talk about the GDP in Malaysia, the encouragement from both sides shouldn't just be from, hey, adopt technology for operational efficiency. It's going to save you X amount of dollars. It should be, how can you utilize this to your benefit to create adjacent businesses for you to create new revenue streams? And if you have to start reviewing your portfolios, which are 40 years old, of which has not brought you a business benefit for a long time, it may be time to do away with those portfolio and actually move on to a new portfolio that's going to generate that type of revenue. Mm. So that's the type of discussion and forums I feel should actually occur. Mm. And it's not occurring enough, in my opinion. I think we don't look at failure enough as well. We tend to love to always look at the one tech startup that did really well. And I think occasionally we fall into a trap of mistaking success. All of us come from a school of thought that, you know, profit equals good, no profit equals bad for your company. But we mistake funding for success, right? And automatically, when you get a lot of funding, when you go into Series D, we go into Series E, we mistake that for success, when ultimately it is the product which is going to reflect on your bottom line, which is supposed to be the success measure. So I think this is the discussion we need to find a balance. What we want to encourage the entrepreneurs out there and technopreneurs, as we want to call them, we need to strike that balance to say that how is this going to impact, number one, more than just what you do out to the greater industry as well as the country. And I think that's the discussion we need to find.
I'm speaking to Sudev Banga. He's the Managing Director for IDC ASEAN, and we'll continue to take a look at how the new Malaysia has been doing over the past year in the digital sphere in just a moment. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
Birkins for Mama. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
And you're back with me, Jeff Sandhu, on Tech Talk, and I'm speaking to Sudev Banga. He's the Managing Director of IDC ASEAN. And early on, we spoke about some of the good things that has happened so far with the new Malaysia, but also on the things that we could do more, especially around digital transformation. And I guess, you know, there are some really good examples like Alibaba. They've, you know, got so many subsidiaries and, you know, all the way to business school as well. And in Korea, I mean, we see Kakao, which is a messaging app, and they're into the virtual banking space now. And on paper, it might seem it's a little bit weird for these kind of companies to venture into these spaces, but they can, and they are actually doing a really good job at it because of the data that they're using. So data really is the future of business then.
Yes, definitely. And I think the good point is that I think we recognize that, and the government recognizes that, and they see the importance of data for a lot of reasons, whether it's internally within the government itself as well as externally for us to move the needle towards the digital economy. Now, again, it goes back to the discussion to say, how do we actually plow ahead with it? Industry 4.0, IR 4.0, I think the framework looks comprehensive. I've taken a look at it. I think we've reviewed it a couple of times. Mm. We enjoy looking at it, but it does look like we want to do a bit too much. And I think in finding the right stakeholders to be able to function as one holistic entity to be able to drive IR 4.0 in Malaysia, I think that's going to be very key for us to get the industry to move the needle. Right now, then, unfortunately, we might be sitting here again in 2020 and then we're going to have that chat and go say, yeah, I might have moved a little bit of a tick. However, the last thing we want to do is sit here and have discussions around implementation as well. Mm. So I think that's where a lot of review on the programs and what is realistic, what is not, who are the right people to be in charge of it, the industry folk who should be involved, whether it's advisors or whether it's actual people who have done it and failed somewhere and come back and can provide those teachings. I was speaking to someone over the last week and he said the benefit for a lot of Indian government and a lot of the Indian companies has been that they just purely learn from failures of others. Hmm. They have that opportunity to actually move beyond the failure to get right into what will succeed because they look outside and they're very focused on looking on the outside. I know our Prime Minister as well has talked a lot about that. How do we look outside and how do we look at some of the failures to actually be able to bring back those stories and say, how do we avoid that? And I think more of those discussions has to occur. Even for IDC, when we represent a lot of things in our presentations now, we've moved beyond saying that company A has done this and they have done well, company B has done this and have done well. We talk about company X failing and saying why you should avoid doing this. How do you change manage? How do you talk to your CEO? How do you talk to your board? How do you get investment? How do you move to capital budgets, for example? So these are some of the things that I think is going to be very critical for us, at least till the end of 2019, to set the stage for 2020.
Mm. So, you know, you mentioned, you know, we may speak again in year 2020 and we may, you know, have a look about you know, how the things have moved. What do you think, based on your expertise in the region itself, you overlook the whole ASEAN region. You know, based on what's happening around the region, what are some of the things that we should follow in order for us to have that, you know, in year 2020, we have a conversation, you go like, wow, Sudev, you know, they did a really good job.
Right. Do you know what? The first thing and the first mistake, honestly, I've seen a lot of governments do, and this is purely from IDC's opinion on what occurs out there, is that they come in very excited and immediately erase what the previous administration has done. Honestly, I feel in Malaysia, the previous administration had some very good programs. They did have programs that were benefiting not just the rakyat, but industry as well. And I think it's very important for the current government to really take stock of that. DFTZ, anyone?
Mm.
I think that's a discussion for us to have as well. Where are we on DFTZ? What is happening? How are we pushing that? And that was a previous administration project.
Yeah.
So it is critical for us to actually take stock of what was good and carry those things through. E-Usahawan, for example, E-Rezeki projects. Those were actually very good projects which were helping people out in the villages and creating entrepreneurs. How are we pushing that ahead? How are we infusing it to the new programs? Take stock of that before we create too many new programs, which are just going to confuse everything. So we definitely need to sit back and review. We saw this in Indonesia. We saw this in the Philippines as well, where very immediately the new administration erased a lot of the frameworks before. And they start from scratch. You start all over again. And sometimes you don't have to do that.
Mm.
So taking stock of that is going to be very important. Second, for us, if you talk about a plan or a framework, you need to move beyond that. Don't announce a framework before you have a plan behind it, right? I mean, DNA 23, again, I think the idea is great. But to talk about it for the past, I don't know, 3-4 months, and it's coming out in speeches, but with no real program or plan around it, I think that is a little bit concerning for us because it just sounds like we want to be popular with people and that's why we're going to talk about it. So I think the second thing for us is to really, when we talk about frameworks, let's make sure we do have a plan around it on how we're going to implement rather than throwing it out and say, okay, now we have to figure it out because we heard 80-85% of the crowd clapping when we announced it. This means we need to get to work.
Mm.
Versus if we announced it and said, you know what, there wasn't really a lot of mummers around it, we can quietly forget and push it in the corner.
Mm.
I think that's the second thing. And I think ultimately the third thing is we need to pick our areas that we want to succeed in, right? And I think a lot of countries want to do a lot of things, but ultimately, if you look across to our neighbors, they pick certain areas or certain sectors they want to excel in. And I think our Prime Minister did this really well 20 years ago. earmarking MSC, earmarking manufacturing, moving us to high-tech manufacturing, it was a very great story for us. I think if we concentrate and bring that back down to that focus, and we then start to funnel our budgets the right way, we park the budgets in the right programs, we'll be very successful over the next couple of years.
Mm. What about some of the policies or things that have been, like Malaysia, we fixed the digital tax at 6%. Like, do you think, you know, having these kind of things would, you know, help to spur local kind of tech startups, or is it kind of like it's going to dampen some of the innovative progress?
It's funny, the digital tax thing, if you look across the globe, there could be about 20, 25 other countries who actually have digital tax.
But are we too soon in moving this? Because it seems like there's so much more that we can explore before we need to start talking about, you know, hey, we got to implement like a digital tax.
Yeah, you're not incorrect. I do agree that it could be a little too soon to talk about this. It could be for us to find a little bit more grounding before we move into a digital tax. And it could also be that it might be postponed away from 2020. I mean, that is a reality, especially as if the ground swells up and they start talking about this being a hindrance more so than helping out. From the government standpoint, it's about recouping, right? But whatever we recoup from this 6% tax, which, by the way, is one of the lowest in the world when it comes to digital tax, it's not going to be enough to pay whatever debt we're in right now. So there must be a little bit more thought again around saying that if we introduce digital tax, are we then hindering foreign companies to actually want to come in? Imagine paying tax on Spotify and on your Netflix right now. That's just something which, you know, we as consumers are going to sit back and go, really, is that worth it? Should we actually be doing that? And instead, if subscriber base falls, that just causes an exit from the foreign company instead. So I think a bit more thought should be there. But I mean, in essence, I guess to play on the other side, it is one of the lowest tax in the world, have to say, at 6%. It goes up to 25% in some countries.
Exactly. And that's where probably, I guess, you know, in certain countries, it's a little bit more mature in terms of the technology readiness and the people that adapt to it. I guess they're more familiar and they're more used to having something like that implemented. Whereas Malaysia, you know, I think a lot of people were like, what? I'm paying 6% more now? Those are the kind of conversations. I guess, you know, we're running out of time, but what's your hopes, or what are some of the things that you would like to see? I know you mentioned, but we need to have a focus, just like what we had many years ago. And right now, you know, in the digital space, there's so many things happening, from the banking sector to manufacturing, agriculture, healthcare. What are some of the things that you would like to see that we actually can really be a hub? Because we always talk about, Malaysia wants to be the hub for this in the region.
Yep.
We want to be the hub for everything.
Yep.
What do you love? What do you like to see?
Well, digital economy, I think, number one, is an ideal. And for us to actually achieve that ideal, like you rightly said, we need to be a hub of something and not many things. And again, that focus for us to actually sit down and take stock of our skill sets, to understand our workforce, to understand how are we even evolving the syllabus or syllabi, for example, in universities, to actually be able to adapt to a digital economy is going to be very important. I met up with an organization which is filled with data scientists, of which none of them are Malaysians, of which they are from they're from Iran, they're from Korea, they're from everywhere else but Malaysia. And we take a step back now and say, hang on, we do want to be the big data exchange of ASEAN or Southeast Asia. However, all our data scientists sitting in Malaysia are foreigners and not Malaysians.
Yeah.
So I think it's important for us, when we aspire to do something, we need to take stock of what we have. I think the cool part about what Cyberjaya was, again, going back 15, 20 years ago, it was a test bit of invention. It was a test bit of creating IP and creating different inventions of which we felt was going to propel and be part of the economy. And we need to come back to that. We need to look back at the ideas that we have. And rather than launching it at Lima, for example, we should actually bring it back into a test lab to say that, is this going to be viable? Is this going to commercialize? And we, you know what, we have five things to look at, whether it's IoT or big data or whichever. But I think ultimately, when we look at the five and say that these are the five we want to concentrate in, build those horizons for the country of which where we should be in 2 years, 5 years and 10 years within this technological space, then we're able to start exporting this technology out. don't jump into IDs just because we think we did national IDs really well 20 years ago and we used to export it out to different countries in the Middle East. Don't jump into, you know, smart schools, for example, just because we did this 20 years ago and think we were really good at it. I think right now, if we assess workforce, look at where the economy is going, understand the industries that require help, and how we can create an ecosystem in the country to help enable our industry, plug that gap. If we are faltering in manufacturing, let's create a manufacturing ecosystem of technology that's going to help them. If we are agriculture-based country, let's think around how we can create technology around agriculture. Let's do that first, and that will help our GDP, because I know the Prime Minister really wants it to move the needle on our GDP, and I think that is going to be the critical point for us.
And surrounding all that is actually the people. You know, it comes down to the people utilizing this, and we need to be more, I guess, you know, technology mature.
Yes.
When it comes to utilizing these kind of services, right?
Yeah.
Sudhir, we'll see what happens when we bring you back onto the show 2020. Thank you so much.
Always fun. Thank you.
And I've been speaking to Sudhir Banga. He's the Managing Director of IDC ASEAN. And we were taking a look at how the new Malaysia has been doing on the digital front of the economy. It's looking good, but, you know, much work is still left to be done. And if you miss any parts of the show, you can download the podcast. It's available on the BFM website or the BFM app. You can also find us on Spotify. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and this has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9. And this is your TM1 Tech Minute. Data, it's been called the oil of the new century, the most valuable commodity of the digital age. Like oil, that data has a limited value unless you know how to refine it and have the infrastructure to pipe it to where it's needed the most. Yet, many data-rich companies suffer from imperfect knowledge. The data gets stuck in a server or in a database, or behind a desk. Cloud-based collaboration tools like those from TM1 are a cost-effective way to bring real-time data and the people who use it together. Conferencing, messaging, and voice communication that empowers individuals with the resources of the team, enabling the smooth flow of information. And that was your TM1 Tech Minute.
Tech Talk, made possible by TM1. To learn more, visit tm1.com.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.